I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up today is not only the last day of the year, but of the decade. We'll have a conversation later in the program about the pivotal moments of the last 10 years, drawing from regular contributors to a variety of our segments. So please stay with us for that. But first, we take a look back at the most memorable moments of 2009 in our weekly barbershop segment. That's where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week, our freelance writer Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney and editor Arsalan Iftikhar, syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete, and NPR's political editor Ken Rudin. Take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Hey, fellas. What's
hey,
good?
Happy
welcome,
New Year.
Welcome to the shop. And to you, how's it going?
Hey, hey, hey.
Hey, man, hey.
Well, you know what? 2009, it's almost behind us, but how can we forget how it started with the historic inauguration of the first African-American president, Barack Obama?
Yeah, if you didn't tell us his name, we might forget it, right? Do you want to play? We'll just play a little clip of...
At least you didn't call him that dude.
Exactly. Right. Let's play a short clip of just a minute from the inauguration for people who want to remember that moment. Here it is.
I, Barack Hussein Obama, do solemnly swear...
I, Barack Hussein Obama, do solemnly swear...
...that I will execute the office of President to the United States faithfully...
...that I will execute...
The office of President of the United States faithfully. And will, to the best of my ability...
And will, to the best of my ability...
...preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States.
Preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States.
So help you God.
So help me God.
Congratulations, Mr. President.
I'd forgotten that. The Chief Justice, John Roberts, messed it up. And they had to do it again.
Right.
I hope that isn't a metaphor for what was to come. I don't know.
Thanks for that, Michelle. Listen, you know what, Ken? He came into office promising all this change. So far, has he lived up to it?
Well, no. Of course, when he was asked, when the president was asked what kind of a grade he would give himself, he said a B+. A lot of people said he more like an incomplete.
Ooh.
But the word of hope that we heard during the campaign, probably the word hope is one of the reasons he got the Nobel Peace Prize, for hope, for what the possibilities. The problem is that as Karl Rove, I hate to quote Karl Rove here, but as Karl Rove pointed out in the Wall Street Journal a week or so ago, President Obama has the lowest approval rating of any first-time elected president since World War II.
Don't.
Now, it started off with tremendous promise. There are a lot of things in the works, but for him to complete these things and to go on to become a great president, he's going to have more finished product than he has now.
I just point out one thing about these approval ratings, because I realize this is one of the Republican talking points, and that's perfectly fine. But let's also remember that at this point in their presidencies, George W. Bush was just post 9/11 and was addressing that, and there was that surge of collective sentiment and patriotism behind him. I think people were loath to criticize the president. President Ronald Reagan had just survived a shooting and with great dignity and courage early in his term. So I think that there are some factors there in the approval
yes,
ratings.
Yes, but there's Eisenhower, there's Kennedy, mm-hmm. there's Nixon, there's Carter. I mean, I'm not trying to – look, everybody has a different situation, and of course everything you say is true. But the point is that he came in with such hope because so many people were so aggravated over the past several years, the preceding several years, on the war, the unending war, the rising taxes, the collapse of the economic system, and people expected so much, and perhaps that's why the decline is that much greater, I think.
You know what, Ruben, to Ken's point, you know, I wrote about it a bit, and my whole thing was like, you know, there's no way he can't fail, because people were coming in, you know, expecting him to turn water to wine and deliver milk and honey and to get sheep laying with lions and all this kind of stuff. So there was just no way that he couldn't fail his first year out.
Yeah, expectations were really high. Everybody had their own. It was like a Christmas tree, you know, for the season. It was everybody hung something on the Obama presidency, and civil libertarians thought they were going to find, you know, close Gitmo, and we're going to end detentions, we're going to do all this good stuff. And people who were anti-war said, we're going to get out of Afghanistan. You
right.
know? Latinos said, we're finally going to get immigration reform. And one after another, these groups have been disappointed. I was struck by this poll this week that just blew me away. It was a poll by CNN that looked at how African-Americans feel about Obama. It's not surprising, President Obama, it's not surprising that still 9 out of 10 approve of the president's job performance.
Hmm.
And he is most popular among African Americans. However, what's interesting is that since January, the percentage of people who just say they're thrilled with the Obama presidency has declined significantly, from 61% in January when he was inaugurated to 42% now. There's a lot of black folks out there included who just are really supportive of the brother. They really are delighted and proud of him and what everything he's accomplished. But they're looking at the policies and they're thinking, you know what? This is not exactly what I was looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And I was struck again when Danny Glover, the Hollywood actor, came forward and just called it out and said, you know what? I look at Bush and his policies. I look at Obama and I don't see a difference. That's heavy.
Well, for me, I'm sick of actors trying to pretend to be pundits. You know, I mean, they're voters too, but, you know, push the mic away when they start asking you about politics, as far as I'm concerned. You know, that goes for Spike Lee, you know, Nipsey Russell, Danny Glover, all of you. Just push the mic away. A-Train, you've been riding with Obama from early on, bro. You still in there?
I've been there since the beginning, and I'll be there till the end. Now, of course, having said that, you know, that doesn't mean that, you know, I'm not going to point out both the success.
I'm sorry, are Democrats not allowed to have a base? I'm just curious.
No, of course not.
Famous last words.
I'm sorry, I'm just curious.
Famous last words.
Go ahead, Arsalan.
Well, you know, I think what's important to keep in mind is, again, he has just barely completed his first year of his presidency. You know, he inherited, you know, $1 trillion deficit, 2 wars. You know, he inherited a lot of the legacy of George W. Bush, which is now his own. You know, I think Ruben pointed out something that was right. You know, in terms of the foreign policy, I think President Obama really has caused a shift from the President Bush paradigms. You know, we had the major speeches in Cairo and Ankara, Turkey, reaching out to the greater world. You know, we did have the upsurge in Afghanistan, which he did say that he was going to do, not as much as he actually did end up doing. And so I think in terms of rhetoric, you know, he may have gotten an A. I think in terms of actual policy, he's probably at the C level right now, so probably combined grade of B.
You're really gracious, bro.
The rhetoric thing is interesting to me because I do wonder whether some of the dissatisfaction with some members of the base has to do with a perceived lack of forcefulness around the issues that that are most important
to
members of the base, like the issue of closing Guantanamo, like the issue of immigration reform. It's a lack, sort of a perceived lack of intensity around the issue.
It's some of that, Michelle, but also a devastating column this week from Maureen Dowd, and you're not going to call her a conservative, obviously. She's someone who caused George Bush and company a lot of heartburn over the years, and she laid into Obama because Obama doesn't have any passion. Even when we discover, you know, a potential terrorist attack on an airplane, Obama is so cerebral. It's all about, you know, he's so brilliant, so to speak, that he doesn't get his heart into it, and people want to see their heart in it. And I think when you start getting criticism from the left, from Maureen Dowd, for not having enough passion, you got a problem.
You know, it's interesting. Let me just jump in just very quickly to say, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. We're having our weekly visit to the barbershop, the last of this year, the last of this decade.
Yeah.
Shed a tear. We're speaking with journalist Jimmy Israel, Arsalan Iftikhar, Ruben Navarrete, and Ken Rudin. One of the things that fascinates me, and Jimmy, I know you wanted to talk about this, is that the whole issue of race as a conversation. Obviously, this is one of the subjects of our program, so we talk about it a lot. But it is interesting to me that when the president has become passionate about an issue like race, he gets criticized for it. Like, for example, on the whole Skip Gates episode,
for people who
remember that, Harvard history professor Henry Louis Gates was arrested after being perceived to be breaking into his own home when the door was jammed. And then, of course, this sort of sparked this whole conversation. The president decided he wanted to kind of lower the temperature by bringing him and the arresting officer in for a beer at the White House. But preceding that, at a press conference, he talked about how he felt this had been handled poorly. And he did have kind of what a lot of people saw as uncharacteristic intensity. And he was criticized for that. So I don't know. Jimmy, what do you think about that?
The problem with that was, look, you know, it showed a lot of people that voted for him how black he actually was. And not just that. I really felt there was a lot of cronyism. I mean, you get your friend, the president, to mediate, you know, between you and the cop. It's not like he was stepping up on behalf of Lindsay Lohan trying to, you know, get the paparazzi to back off her, or, you know, he was trying to mediate, you know, John and K plus eight. You know, I mean, he stepped in with his buddy. You know, and I don't know. I
hear you, but overall, I'm interested in what the guys have to say about the way, if in fact, Ruben, maybe you want to jump in on
because,
this, whether or not the sort of the national dialogue on race has been changed at all.
Totally, I think so, and I think Obama gets an A++++ for his wonderful speech in Philadelphia when he was running for president. When he has approached the issue of race in a very thoughtful and passionate way, as he did in that speech, Everybody loves it. It's hard to find any criticism. But what he did with regard to the Cambridge Police Department, Obama spoke stupidly, to borrow a phrase.
Mm.
You know, he brought down the temperature with beers on the White House lawn because he'd already raised the temperature by speaking out of turn about what had happened without having all the facts before him, having later to apologize for that. So I think that the problem with people is that they want – race is such an explosive issue. When you're the first black president talking about it, do it like you did it in Philadelphia.
Right.
Don't do it like, you know, the Cambridge police acted stupidly.
Mm, well, interesting. Go ahead, Arsalan.
But what I think the skip grade to Joe Crowley incident did prove is that we do not yet live in a post-racial America. You know, I think when we obviously talked about it extensively on the barbershop here, you know, in terms of the fact that, you know, had it been a white professor in his own house talking back to a police officer, I think that I don't think there'd be anybody on this panel who would have ever said that, you know, he would have then been escorted outside and then been arrested. And so I think it proves, there are missteps that were taken, but I also think it speaks to a broader point about how even with the election of Barack Obama as the 44th president, we still do not live in a post-racial America yet.
Ken, did you want to weigh on this before we move on?
Well, several things. First of all, Ruben makes a very good point. I mean, the fact is that a lot of people criticized Obama for speaking from his heart, and they may have said some silly things about race, and they had to backtrack from. But then again, we always complain about how our politicians are so scripted, are so unreal, that when President Obama does say something from the heart, whether it's right or wrong, he gets criticized for that, too. So he seems like he can't have it either way.
Well, you know, this year there was a lot of stuff to talk about. And there was a lot of stuff that happened in pop culture. We had Tiger Woods fall from grace. There was the Chris Brown and Rihanna domestic assault. But nothing touched all of our lives the way that it did with the King of Pop passing this year. Who do we think we'll see inheriting MJ's throne? A-Train.
Oh, man. I don't think that's a throne that can be inherited. For me, at least, I will have to give my 2009 Redunculus Award to Tiger Woods. I mean, just to see that entire debacle. I mean, here you had the first billion-dollar athlete, one of the most recognizable faces, athletic faces on the face of the earth, and within a couple of weeks to see that fall from grace. To me, he gets the yearly Redunculus Award.
Okay, if we can find him, he gets the award. But right,
right. That's true.
K-Dog.
Yeah, well, I was going to say that I think Tiger Woods is with Dick Cheney in that bunker. He hasn't come out yet, which is kind of strange. But do you remember what happened with Muhammad Ali when, in 1964, 65, 66? Mm-hmm. He was a great heavyweight champion, but he also had this stuff outside the ring that, of course, was about politics and about race and about the Vietnam War, which seemed to, you know, capture the entire country. So is Tiger Woods a lesser of a golfer? No. Is he not the athlete of the decade? Who knows, or the year or whatever. But the point is that we seem to confuse sportsmen and athletes with ideals. And Tiger Woods may not be my ideal or your ideal. He may be a great golfer, too. And at some point, we can have to decide what's more important.
But, you know, it is interesting to me that the whole role of celebrity is something that just became a topic of the decade. These reality shows, which really aren't real. I mean, come on, who are we kidding? But it just exposed people and their lives to us in a way that we really hadn't seen before. And then people becoming famous for being famous. I think it kind of led to this idea that we're entitled to know all these people's business in a way that we would not have thought 20 or 30 years ago.
Yeah, we're deep into the Twitter generation. We're deep into Facebook. We're deep into sharing everything we know about each other and having people follow us around, all such stuff. But this notion that fame is like the new drug, that was really driven home in 2009. You had the White House gate crashers. You had Balloon Boy. Mm-hmm. Every time there was a kind of a head-scratching story, sure enough, the baseline was, these people want their own reality show.
Yeah, that's
this
so
is
true.
How people audition for reality shows these days.
Well, speaking of stories, we only have a couple minutes left, and I'm sure hope we could hear from everybody on this. I'd love to know if each of you, what was the most undercovered story of 2009? Something you really thought should have gotten more attention, or if you want to do it this way, what's the story you're most interested in for 2010? Could we do that? Arsalan, do you want to start?
Yeah, I think for me, one of the most underreported stories of the year had to do with the child actors of Slumdog Millionaire. After the movie, you know, became a global, you know, phenomenon. The young girl in Slumdog Millionaire was essentially put on auction by her own family because of the fact that, you know, they didn't get paid enough for the movie, and they felt that, you know, getting back to the cult of celebrity, that they were going to, you know, be able to cash in on the fame of their child actor.
That's interesting. Really sad, Ruben, though. Ruben, what about you?
I think there's a lot to be said, and hopefully will still be said, about where the left is with Barack Obama on some of these issues, civil libertarians I mentioned before and all. But basically, the Republicans have their own dysfunctions, clearly, but one of the things that liberals are struggling with, and we need to hear more about, is sort of the gradual disillusionment with the president. So maybe we'll be hearing more of that.
Ken, what about you?
Well, I don't think anything is uncovered, especially with 24/7 cable. But if you looked at the Tea Parties, if you looked at the anger and you looked at the hate and the stuff that was spewed from them with basically based on misinformation or not, the point is there's so much anger in this country. And to talk about post-razor brand. You can name any post you want, but the point is there's a lot of anger in this country that I suspect as we get closer to election will only get worse.
Interesting. For me, I must say immigration, because I feel that it in part because the major party candidates really didn't disagree on the issue. The issue didn't get the attention that it would have otherwise, but I still think it's the sleeper issue. Jimmy, final word very briefly.
State of public school education. I want to read more about that.
So true. So well said. Well, thank you, everybody. Happy New Year. We loved having you all every minute. Jimmy Israel is a freelance journalist who writes for TheRoot.com. He's also a presidential fellow at Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, Ohio. Arsalan Iftikhar is a civil rights attorney, the founder of TheMuslimGuy.com, and a legal fellow for the Institute for Social Policy and Understanding. They were both here in our Washington, D.C. studio. Ken Rudin is NPR's political editor. He joined us on the line from his home office. And Ruben Navarrete is a syndicated columnist. He writes for CNN.com and the San Diego Union Tribune. He joined us on the line from San Diego. Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year.
At least on a safe New Year, too.
Yep, yep.